Once upon a time, there was a peasant woman who was a very wicked woman. And she died and had not left behind a single good deed. The devils caught her and plunged her into the lake of fire. So her guardian angel stood and wondered what good deed that she had perhaps done that she could go to God and appeal on her behalf. And so the angel appeared before God and said, "Lord, one time she pulled up an onion from her garden and gave it to a peasant." And God answered the angel, "You take that onion and hold it out to her in the lake and let her take hold of it and be pulled out. And if you can pull her out of the lake, let her come to paradise. But if the onion breaks, the woman must stay where she is." This delighted the angel. And so he went back to the woman and he said, "Here, take hold of the onion." And she did. And she was being pulled out of the lake of fire. Just as she got out of the lake, other sinners grabbed onto her legs. And she shouted at them and kicked at them. And she said, "I'm being pulled out of the fire, not you. It's my onion, not yours." As soon as she said this, the onion broke. And the woman fell into the lake, and she is burning there to this day. And the angel went away and wept. This story is by Dostoevsky. It's taken from the Brothers Karamazov. And in it we see encapsulated something St. Augustine had said centuries earlier, what he termed incurvatus in se, that is, a life turned in on itself. And the problem with us human beings is we have a tendency, like the woman in this story, to be turned inward. But what God wants for us is rather than to be turned this way, to learn to raise our eyes heavenward so that we can then look outward. You see, the woman's life was wicked because she was consumed by herself. What the 20th century Swiss theologian Hans Urs von Balthasar termed the ego drama. This is the way of looking at your life where you think, "I am the center of my story. My life is about me, my wants, my ambitions, my desires." What at the end of that passage from James, he referred to as your pleasures. So what is the opposite of the ego drama? Von Balthasar calls it the theodrama. To live according to that drama where we realize that although our life is of significance and importance, it's not about me. My life is about looking upward to God and looking outward towards others. For you see, this is the story that God is writing. This is the story he wants each one of us to be part of. And Dostoevsky so captured this that the angel did everything the angel could to see that that woman could become part of his story. This tension between the ego drama and the theo drama is played out in today's gospel. Do you remember how our gospel started? When they had come down from the mountain, what had happened on the mountain? Jesus had been transfigured before three of the apostles, Peter, James, and John. In other words, those three were given a vision of the theo drama. Here is the central character. But now, as they come down from the mountain, Jesus is talking with them about his suffering. And as they're continuing along the way, Jesus is aware that, those boys are having an argument. And when they get to where they're going, he says, "So what were you guys arguing about along the way?" And I'm imagining, John said, "Well, I'm the beloved disciple and you're not." Matthew said, "I used to have lots of money. I gave that all up. Look what I have sacrificed in order to follow Jesus. Surely I'm the greatest." And then there was Peter. "I've been made the Pope, and you haven't. Surely I'm the greatest." That's the ego drama. There's a fancy word for sin. It's the word hubris. Hubris is hell. That state inhabited by those who have actually won Academy Awards. Academy Awards for playing the ego drama so well. C.S. Lewis, in his book called The Great Divorce, has this amazing depiction of heaven and of hell. And the story is told from the perspective of a narrator who is actually at this time in hell, and he describes hell as this large gray city. It's always rainy, kind of like what it's been like here the last few days, and it's always like twilight, that the lights are being turned on. The streets are empty. They're lined with dingy boarded houses, small tobacco shops, windowless warehouses, and then books that sell the works of Aristotle. Now, I don't know why Lewis kind of mentions Aristotle's works, but it might be this sort of idea. People have good intentions. Oh, I'm going to get that book. I'm going to read something of great significance, and we never get around to reading it. At this point, the narrator joins a queue. That's an English word for a line. And they're on a bus. And this bus is going to the outskirts of heaven. We don't see hell again in the story. But we learn more about hell as the story continues. For you see the citizens from that city, as they're on the bus going to the outskirts of heaven, you know what they're doing? They're quarreling with one another. And we're then told that back in hell, the streets are empty because the people who live there are going farther and farther and farther away from one another. Oh, something else about hell? You can imagine a house, and it appears like that, but it has no substance, so it can't keep out the rain. Most striking of all is that Lewis says that although hell seems to be this huge city that goes on and on forever, when they get to the outskirts of heaven, they discover, and these are Lewis's words, all hell is smaller than a pebble when compared to the heavenly world. Now, the narrator is not yet fit for heaven. You see, the brightness of heaven renders him and the others who have come up from hell transparent. They're like ghosts because of how insubstantial they are in relation even to heaven's outskirts. And then the narrator says these words. One could attend to them, that is, these people, or ignore them at will as you would the dirt on a window pane. I noticed that the grass did not bend under their feet. Even the dewdrops were not disturbed. They are still in the same form as they were in this world. But the glory of heaven renders the definition of their form incomplete. It was the light, the grass, the trees that were different, made of some different substance, so much solider than the things of our country that in comparison to heaven, these people were as nothing. So my question today is, how do we become substantive? How do we grow in this life so that in the life to come we will have the material substance to be made ready for heaven? And at the very heart of this theme, the very heart of the theodrama, is the call to cultivate the virtue of humility. Jesus says it very clearly in today's gospel. Whoever wants to be first must be last of all and servant of all. Then he took a little child and put it among them, and taking it in his arms, he said to them, whoever welcomes such a one as this welcomes me. And whoever welcomes me welcomes not me, but the one who sent me. Understand this. It's as we learn to notice the little ones. It's as we learn to notice the little things of our daily life. And it's as we accept that we are really little. You are so small, so am I. But in understanding our smallness, that's when we discover our true greatness. Because it's only then that the meaning, the purpose, and the lasting value of our lives comes to life. Now, I do not know your souls very well, but I know one person's soul extremely well. His name is Jonathan, and I've been walking with his soul for 57 years. And I know every single day of every single week, of every single month, of every single year, I have a battle going on. And it is this battle to live my life turned in on myself. It is the battle to say, I know there's the theodrama, but I'm kind of enjoying the ego drama, thank you very much. But here's the problem. If we don't admit this struggle and how it is a struggle of life and death, then our communities, be they our families, be they our churches, be they our countries, will be filled with people living the ego drama. And what do such communities look like? Well, St. James put it so clearly when he wrote, "For where there is envy and selfish ambition, there will also be disorder and wickedness of every kind. Those conflicts and disputes among you, where do they come from? Do they not come from your cravings that are at war within you? You want something and you do not have it, so you commit murder. And you covet something and cannot obtain it, so you engage in disputes and conflicts." That's the biblical version of C.S. Lewis's hell. And there are so many people, maybe even some of you right here today, you say, that's the kind of world I'm living in. The only way we can leave this gray wasteland behind is by cultivating the perspective of the theodrama and committing ourselves to it every morning of every day for the rest of our life. And what does St. James tell us about the theodrama? The wisdom from above is first of all pure, peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without a trace of partiality or hypocrisy. So here's the difference. People who live in the ego drama, they're allowing their feelings to dictate how they live. People who are learning to live in the theodrama are not being governed by their feelings. They're being governed by their will. And they are choosing, making hard choices, being willing to yield, learning the way of gentleness, of being peaceful, of holding our tongue when what we want to do is lash out, but we're not going to do it. This is really hard. And you cannot do it without the sacraments of the church, particularly the sacrament of confession. We have to come to confession. And we have to admit to Jesus those times when we say, Jesus, I've been living the ego drama and I am sorry. Please help to change my heart. For beloved, this life, you see, is the audition. And each and every one of us is auditioning for two shows. Either the great show of heaven or the sideshow of hell. And wherever we end up, our roles will be eternal, as Dostoevsky so clearly articulated in my opening story. What God wants for each of us is to be cast in that drama where the virtues of genuineness, of mercy, of transparency, that is an honesty, are being rehearsed throughout our earthly life. For you see, when we purposely choose to live the theodrama, listen to what St. James says the consequences will be. And a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace for those who make peace. I know that's what you want. I know this is what I want. This is the life, right here, right now, where Jesus is inspiring us to live in such a way as to discover our true purpose and freedom. And the way we do that is by making our story part of his story. For Jesus Christ alone is the author of life.